RadioInfluence.com.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Dentist appointment at 10 a.m. Val.
And beans! You have a dentist appointment at 10 a.m. we were just talking about. Gosh, the dreaded dentist.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Well, we'll try and keep you happy for at least an hour.
It's not surgery or anything like that. It's just a cleaning and some game planning to help correct a shifted tooth that has detached from a permanent retainer. So it's not that bad at all, but I had been putting it off for a long time because nothing you do at a dentist's office is usually covered, whether you have insurance or not. So this is the predicament.
Yeah, dentists are expensive. I know because I used to work in the industry for a very long time. It's not cheap, that's for damn sure. It's actually like one of the, I should probably keep the inside baseball to myself, but one of the industries that I think just completely overcharges for things in a kind of sick way.
Is dentistry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You go in, you need a crown, right? The doctor's charging you obviously for the time, but then the markup on that crown that goes in your mouth is pretty significant.
Mm.
So
yeah, and then of course the emotional trauma.
Oh yeah.
You know what I hate the most? I hate X-rays the most. They put this gigantic device in your mouth. You clamp down. I feel it tickling my epiglottis, and I can't. I'm a gagger. I gag. Okay. There are some mornings I can't even brush halfway up my tongue.
Gosh.
Other mornings I can get down to my stomach, but whatever.
My son was like that and still is, actually. Feeding him was a challenge.
Wow.
So.
There's that. All right, so that's my morning.
Well, good. And listen, you have other things going on today, too. And so do I. Today, Frank, is the hearing. The hearing we've all been waiting for. The beginning of the beginning. The hearing of Attorney General Barr in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, chaired by Lindsey Graham.
Okay, so then what is this? What is this actually going to give me the thumbnail sketch of what this is going to be all about over there? In I guess this should be somewhat less hostile territory.
Yes.
Just because of the majority on this Senate, but I'm seeing the Eric Prince investigation they want, and there's just so much going on in that respect. So what are we looking at today?
We are looking at Barr testifying about the Mueller report, and he's going to be answering those questions. But if you think for a second, there won't be other questions in there about investigations and finding out what happened and, you know, why he thinks A, B, or C. Like, why do you think they didn't mention Fusion GPS in there? Why do you? I don't know what Barr is going to be able to answer or how much he's going to say, or if he's going to say, I can't talk to this or speak to this because it's part of an ongoing investigation. And if you're listening to this podcast, chances are it's either over already or it's in the midst of happening. So bear with our foreshadowing for the afternoon that'll happen in just a little while. But, you know, who knows what the whole... I think we're going to get some nuggets in there for sure.
That'd be great. It's May Day. It is May Day.
Yep.
So a whole lot of great stuff going on.
Hey, why don't you explain quickly? Give us a very brief history of May Day, if you know. Because I know you're a history guy.
Well, I haven't really even looked into it. It's just that day that is commemorated by communists. And as far as the history goes,
I believe. It's actually,
is it?
Yeah, it's an American sort of rooted thing. It's like, you know, it kind of leans in the paganism sort of a thing. I read an article yesterday about it, and that's why I was asking you, because I know how you are with history and stuff.
I see here, and honestly, this is one thing I just have never looked into. May Day, a public holiday, usually celebrated on May 1st. It's an ancient Northern Hemisphere spring festival and a traditional spring holiday in many cultures. Dances, singing, and cake.
Cake?
Usually. I don't know. I know.
You know.
Now, where communism comes into it, I just have not. Oh, wait. Here's CNN, of course. Its origins and its ties to labor rights.
Oh.
Doesn't that sound, doesn't labor rights sound so much better than communism?
It's CNN, God. You said.
Yeah, CNN.
You know, speaking of cake, quickly before we move on, I did a tweet. I'm convinced that the iPhone is basically taking its autocorrect to a new level to try and discredit people and make them look like idiots. I tweet things, and I'm almost tempted to start recording my phone as I'm tweeting and typing, so that people can see just how asinine these corrections are, and they happen so quickly, like they happen at the very last second, and you don't have time before you hit the button to stop and fix it.
Yep.
So I did this tweet a week or two ago where I said something about needing our country back, and it was a really serious tweet about, you know, the investigations and blah, blah, blah. And at the end, I said, and we need our country back. And it auto-corrected the word back to cake.
Yeah, we need our country cake right now.
So it started a flurry of people who were like, I love cake. I'd love to have some cake. It was fun. It ended up being funny. And I couldn't delete the tweet because by that time, people, like hundreds of people had retweeted it. And I'm like, cake? What are these people talking about, cake? And then I went back and read it. And I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, well, not only that, I don't know if there's an option. There has to be an option where you can turn off autocorrect.
There is.
There has to be. But the other thing there, too, is I have noticed a very stark decline in how good talk-to-text is.
Really?
Like when you dictate texts, which is sometimes necessary, I've just seen a very, very big decline in how well it interprets what you're saying, and the things that it says you're saying sometimes are ridiculous. I don't have any examples.
Yeah.
But it sucks. I can talk out an entire text, then I have to go back and edit.
Yeah. No. What's the point at that point, right?
Yeah.
It's funny because I yesterday was at my son's baseball game, and there was one of the sets of parents, or my daughters, I'm sorry, turned around and was like asking us questions because their first real game is today. It was a practice. 2-hour practices for these kids. I'm like, wow, what the heck? But anyway, I was in a Telegram chat, and I guess I hit the voice to text button, and our entire conversation, 4 people talking, got picked up by the voice to text and texted into the texted into the room.
Jeez. Well, yeah, but well, there you go. There you go. May Day craziness and May texts craziness. And everything else. So Mueller challenged Barr spin. Oh, what does that mean?
Gosh. This probably is the most transparent, horrible sort of example of media complicity in all of this crap that I've ever seen, where they're forced to tell the truth because they can't lie about it, because the letter probably actually exists. So the New York Times and the Washington Post came out last night with a story timed so perfectly for the day before Barr's hearing. I mean, just the timing of it. It's like, you know, you guys are just carrying water for horrible people at this point. That's all they're doing, is trying to maintain this narrative that people, you know, that this narrative that they've created. And basically destroying the, I mean, they are the enemy of the people. They are doing a huge disservice to the country. They're complicit, if not actively participating in this coup against a sitting president, which is ongoing, by the way. It's not like this has stopped. You know, we're not Venezuela right now, but this coup attempt is ongoing. You agree?
I agree. But the other thing here, too, is you're talking about Venezuela. I look at Venezuela. I see May Day. I look at France and Europe. Because, you know, on a day like today, you know that there's going to be commie protesters added on top of the Yellow Vest. Now, the Yellow Vest movement has been relegated mostly to the weekend, because that's when people who work have to go and, you know, address all the things that are that are making them upset about the way their country are going. So this is going to be really interesting to see what happens when these black bloc hooded idiots wake up and do their thing.
We've got a really good clip too in a minute about Antifa, actually.
Okay.
Which we'll get to. But so the Washington Post and the New York Times come out with this article that basically Mueller wrote a letter to Barr and he said, you know, I have a problem with the way this is being characterized. Well, this is what they tried to tell us. The first three paragraphs of the story were, you know, Barr mischaracterized the report and Mueller was upset about it. And so it caused, you know, all kinds of this is not what the Mueller special counsel wanted people to be able to see, all kinds of stuff like that. And then when we get down into the article, like to the good part of it, where it actually has the real truth buried three or four paragraphs down, we see this sentence. This sentence alone: when Barr pressed him whether he thought Barr's letter was inaccurate, Mueller said he did not, but felt that the media coverage of the letter was misinterpreting the investigation.
What the? What article you looking at? Is it MSN?
This is from the Washington Post.
Mueller complained that Barr's letter did not capture context of Trump's probe. That's the headline. That's the headline.
But in the article, they literally out themselves. Like, Mueller was saying, I'm really unfortunate. It's really unfortunate how the media coverage of the letter is misinterpreting everything we did. Now, the media prints that. He's scolding them, and they're turning this into something about Barr. Now, if you remember, like, let's think about this for a second. The media coverage of this was Barr doesn't have the right to decide whether or not there's obstruction of justice. You know, it was all this obstruction of justice, impeachment, blah, 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 blah talk. Does Mueller mean to say that that's not what he was trying to say in his obstruction of justice portion? And that's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm skimming through the whole thing right now. And there it is. When Barr pressed Mueller on whether he thought Barr's memo to Congress was inaccurate, Mueller said he did not, but felt that the media coverage of it was misinterpreting the investigation, officials said.
Yeah.
And Mueller has had to send spokespeople out at least once or twice during the course of the investigation to let the press and let the public know that all the reporting and the speculation was completely off base in the past.
Yeah. And I think,
but then again, this is what the whole publicity around the Mueller report has only ever been about: creating speculation that could be spun to impact public opinion.
Well, the funniest thing about this too is, Frank, and you're right, that's why I say they're complicit completely. The funniest thing about this is that this is, I can't say it any better than this. In other words, the media is now misinterpreting and misrepresenting a letter from Mueller complaining that the media was misinterpreting or misrepresenting a letter from Barr, as per Jeff Carlson from the Epoch.
It doesn't even I'm sure that there must be at least a minimal level of self-awareness, but it doesn't even matter. It's the only card there is to play right now. Create and completely confound people. Create confusion. Just confound and confuse. That's all the play is.
The funny thing is, too, is Byron York came out and said something just so poignant yesterday. He requoted. I'll be okay. It's fine. It's early in the morning. You know, I got a busy day. You know, I'm a little bit flustered that you're going to the dentist.
That's the past tense of tweeting, is twoting.
Twoting. That's it. We started a new word. Everybody twoted. He said, he retweeted someone who said, I think Mueller's word over Barr's matters, like kind of an F ton. And then Byron York says, why take someone's word when you can read the report yourself? And it's so true. Like, read it yourself, people. Read the thing.
Can you imagine the situation there? You have a man and his team put out a report after compiling it for 2 years. And then at that time, because the report obviously doesn't give you any of the fuel that you want, you are then saying, forget the report. Listen to the summary of the man who wrote the report.
Yeah.
Or what's the opinion of the man who wrote the report? What are you talking about?
It's in there.
The report is the work
of the man.
Oh, but so, you know, this is as much as it is eating up everybody's attention, this is the most distracting bullshit. Oh my God. And I hate when people say the world is burning down around us, but there is literally fires being set to cities around the world right now. And, it's like an electron cloud of upheaval that is just floating all around us on every angle. And this is just unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. There's upheaval everywhere because people are tired of being under the boot of jerks. And they're being manipulated in many cases on both sides of the aisle. Manipulation, case in point. This whole Biden, this has been spoken about a lot, but I have to just say this. This whole Biden reigniting of the Charlottesville comments that are based on complete fabrication of what was said. Scott Adams has a really good tweet up and he basically says, here's a fun challenge for believers in the debunked fine people hoax. Ask a believer, meaning people who believe that Trump said that Nazis and neo-Nazis and white nationalists are fine people. Ask them to read out loud the second part of Trump's statement. To just give it to them and say, read this out loud. And it's highlighted. It says, I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists because they should be condemned totally. But you had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, and the press has treated them absolutely unfairly. Now, in the other group also, you had some fine people, but you also had troublemakers, and you see them come with the black outfits and with the helmets and with the baseball bats. You had a lot of bad people in the other group, too.
Yeah, so what he's talking about, everybody, is that on the Antifa side, on the communist side that wants to wipe history off the face of the earth so they can control the present and the future, there might be some who just want to show up with their bad opinions and just talk about or protest a certain thing or a topic within those very uneducated and misguided people are those who can't even articulate their bad positions and just start throwing bottles of piss around. Now, on the other side of that, where you might have neo-Nazis and white nationalists who should be condemned completely, you have people like me who don't want to see history, no matter how ugly it may be to some people, wiped off the face of the earth because history gives us perspective. And he's talking about me and you, Tracy, and other people like us who don't want to see this virus, mind virus, spread over the land. So it's, once again, who are we dealing with? We're dealing with the press. Why does he say that they're the enemy of the people? Because still to this point, they're sticking with this. Still to this point, they're trying to tell people that he made fun of a disabled journalist. Reporter.
You know, that's the thing that woke Brandon up.
Good.
That
was the most obvious.
He believed that, and someone sent a compilation video of everybody, you know, of every time he's ever done that throughout all the years. And Brandon was like, it was like, you know how sometimes you're just shown something and you're like, oh my gosh, I was wrong the entire time. And it's just your like aha movement moment. You've never had that happen?
That's the crisis point right there that everybody has to deal with personally, Tracy. That's when people bring up the cognitive dissonance. Yep. That's the crisis point. Everybody will be able to inside be honest with themselves and say, oh, shit, I was wrong. Will you be able to let that admission come to the surface, especially when most of our relationships are built upon this shared rage now, you know?
Yeah. That's why I think, you know, having somebody read this statement out loud who believes what is being fed to them is the best way to kind of shake them awake. Because if you have to say that out loud, you're going to stop even like not even three quarters of the way through, like maybe through the first sentence and be like, oh my gosh, I can't say this. It completely destroys the narrative. Like, or this is, oh, you know what I'm saying? It's perfect.
Yeah.
Speaking of Antifa, Chris Cuomo has been really on fire lately with his genius on his show on CNN. He's been on fire. Yeah. I mean,
he's definitely burning the midnight oil.
Holy.
He's trying to make sense of something.
Dude, I just know this guy is just not smart. He's just really not smart.
And he keeps bringing up his training in law and his education. Is he really a lawyer?
Yeah, that's what he says. I don't. Everybody keeps talking about that because it's really just so far. Like, I was on an interview last night I did with Doug Hagman. And I said, these people, are these our best and our brightest, like running the FBI? And, you know, these are not our best and our brightest. I mean, you and I could go into the FBI at the director level and do better than these people. And I mean that most people listening could, if we all got together, we could make one hell of an upper level FBI, because we'd never be stupid enough to do all of this stuff. And then broadcast it out thinking that the hubris, my God.
Yeah.
But let's listen to this clip from Chris Cuomo.
Cricket Cuomo.
I'm having a hard time because seriously, I think I'm just vicariously feeling like I'm at the dentist with you and my mouth is all messed.
Yeah. You know, I am very oddly, I'm feeling a wave of serenity. is waving, is coming over me. It's like, as long as it's not a physical or something where I have to get blood drawn, I think I can get through it.
I know that you hate that.
I hate getting blood drawn.
What is it about that drives you so crazy?
I don't know, because everyone's like, well, Frank, you got all the tattoos and what do you care about needles? I say, it's not needles. It's just it's hooking up to a vein. It is, it's the, you know, the tie into like intravenous drug use. And I have a lot of, I don't know.
All right.
I have to work. I work through it though. I don't avoid it. I get it done and I have my orange juice afterwards and I do my thing, but.
Well,
whatever.
You know, I think that the tattoo you did is an Illuminati ritual. So
when you join the Illuminati, they tell you, you better put this tattoo on right now.
Yeah.
And then they instruct you to drive cars like Nissans and, live the high life.
For those of you who don't know, Frank has a tattoo on his arm. What is it of?
The all-seeing eye.
And
yeah, go ahead.
It's real. I mean, you know, go ahead. You go first and I'll share the rest of
this. No, please just go. it's you do it.
So he has the all-seeing eye on his arm. And you know, it's funny. I just lost it the other day, like a week or two ago. Somebody, I shared the show. Let's just get this out, okay? Because it's really starting to get on my nerves. And I'm sorry about that. Like, sometimes things bother me. My sister is a beautifully talented graphic designer. And she designed the logo for the show, as you know, Frank. And
yes.
We kind of schemed back and forth. We had a lot of conversations. We wanted to keep it as sort of vanilla as possible while still kind of portraying what we wanted to about what the show is about. And so she drew an illustration of the, you know, if you've seen the logo for the show, you know, it's the Capitol with all the buildings. And then there's a light bulb above it and it's shining light on the Capitol. It's meant to be, you know, here we are shining light on all your nonsense. But if I could tell you the number of people who ask me why I've got so much Illuminati symbolism in the logo to our show. Like, it's starting to really grate on me. Because, like, listen, people, if you don't realize it by now that we're not bad people that are, you know what I mean? Like, really? So finally, someone said, did you know that you had all this Illuminati symbolism? And did you do this on purpose? And I said, actually, yes. I sat down with my sister. We talked to one another. And I said, let's put things in here that'll trigger just the right people. Like,
well, first of all, you have to ask yourself, what's the Illuminati symbolism? And then, of course, the first thing you can go to is the obelisk. But
is it that, or is it the fact that the light coming down is in the shape of a triangle? I don't understand.
It's not even a full triangle because you have the light bulb at the top that has the curve to it. It's not even like a triangle with the tip taken off. It's just a light bulb, and it's just supposed to say, okay, well, here is just shining some sunlight on a really dark, creepy creepy place. Mm-hmm. And what is that creepy place? Well, it's Washington, D.C. And how are you going to be able to portray Washington, D.C. without doing the city skyline with, you know, the Washington Monument and the Capitol building? And so it's giving you, it's like the backdrop of what the conversation is. So there's that. But listen, I get it a lot with the tattoo as well. And I guess I didn't have a lot of foresight with that. I thought it was just cool because it was the only little space, the little piece of real estate left on my arm. It was the crease and it was kind of triangle shaped. I said, hey, you know what? let's just do this. Got it. Cool. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, what is this about? And I'm like, oh no,
you're an Illuminati headmaster. Yeah.
That's why I'm like, oh, well, thank God, winter and fall are coming up so I can start wearing long sleeve shirts again.
It's only the spring and summer you have to deal with this nonsense.
Spring and summer, you get at least two new viewers a week that say, what's with this?
I know. I'm sorry. I got a little heated on that, but it's just crazy. Like,
but hey, listen, it doesn't demean it. It should not lessen the influence of these types of people. It shouldn't take away from the paranoia that's been stoked. There's a lot of different fingers in this pie, and there's a lot of people and a lot of, I don't know, there's a lot of movements at play competing with each other for power and a lot of things going on and a lot stacked against us. So at this point,
I suppose if that's the only, you know, kind of horrible thing that's being said, I think we're in good shape.
It's great shape. So it's not coming down on people, just saying, hey, relax. We promise it's nothing nefarious and we're just moving on.
Yeah. All right. So let's listen to Chris Cuomo talk about Antifa.
I've watched them in the streets protesting in different situations. Okay. There are certainly aspects of them that are true to a cause. That is a good cause. They want social justice. They want whatever they want in that context. You tell me when that has ever happened. You tell me when that has ever happened with neo-Nazis. Where they have ever been doing the right thing.
Antifa is not a good cause. Antifa does not have good aims. Antifa wants power, wants political power taken through force. That's what Antifa is all about. I mean, they are the inheritors of Nazis and brown shirts.
I am not here to espouse Antifa. Or any group on the political spectrum.
Sounds like it.
No, because you want it to be like that, because you want it to be.
No, you're doing it.
No.
And you want to be able to run away after something like this and say, Cuomo loves the alt-left. He loves them. And you know it's not true. You know it's
BS. He just said
it. What I'm saying is this. You don't draw a moral equivalence between neo-Nazis and the people there to fight against them. You don't do it in that context because it's not what we are about in this country. Okay. And Rob, when you pair it with
a president
who refuses to call out Steve King, a president who says that the problems with domestic terrorism with right-wing extremists is not a big deal, but he talks about Islam hating all of us, when they are nowhere near responsible for what we're dealing with here in terms of death.
There's so much in here.
Right-wing extremists.
It's very hard.
When you put them all together, it makes you wonder, Rob, why is he so soft on one and so loud on the other? Help me understand.
He said condemned totally.
He does not talk about the people who attack these synagogues and who attack Muslims the way he does talk about Muslims who do the attacking, and you know it. And if you want, I'll send you volumes of his statements.
Yeah, who? Okay, you know who would disagree with you about that is Rabbi Goldstein today.
Yeah, I heard
that
him.
That heroic man.
I heard him, and I respect his pain, and I respect his message.
And the consolation that the president brought him with his words of compassion. And that is not the story, by the way, of a man who hates Jews and who praises Nazis. As a matter of fact, quite the opposite.
I didn't say he praises Nazis, and I didn't say he hates Jews. If you can only resort to the absurd, Steve, you're not worth the position. Don't resort to the absurd. I'm saying he's quiet when it comes to how he condemns the right.
Oh,
he's quiet.
My God.
You need 5 to 10 minutes to unpack every 10 seconds.
Yes.
Because he says things and he keeps going. He contradicts. He gaslights. He makes you seem like you're nuts for actually hearing what he said correctly because he doesn't even know what he's saying.
How do you, I mean, I wanted to stop it after every sentence he said. Like, you, I mean, yeah, we could do 10 minutes on each one because it's just what he believes this. I really believe that Chris Cuomo believes what he's saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is the most asinine 2 minutes and 20 seconds I have seen in a really long time.
Well, I was going, I had that ready for last night's show, but I spent so much time with Dr. Dave Janda last night that I didn't have time to get around to it. I was going to open in the second half, was going to open with that. And then I was going to segue right into all of this criticism that President Trump was receiving over his comments he made about how Robert E. Lee was a great general, which he was. And I wanted to take all of that stuff to just talk about Civil War history a little bit more and the pretty much the Civil War history industrial complex that has given people only a certain way of thinking. This Antifa edge to it is certainly all part of it. It's certainly all part of it. And to say that, oh, well, listen, you know, I don't love Antifa, but I think that they do a great job.
Like, does he have any idea what he's talking? I mean,
No, he doesn't.
He can't have any idea that what they, I mean, or maybe he does and just doesn't care. It's justified violence when it's from your side. Here, let's listen to another quick.
You know what the thing it is? The thing is, it's justified violence when it's from his side. Meanwhile, people on, I guess, our side never justify the violence.
No,
from anybody. And in fact, the only reason why I would stand, you would ever find me standing, maybe just incidentally, coincidentally, side by side with someone who has, you know, backwards ideas about race and ethnicity and all that. You're telling me that Antifa aren't brown supremacists? There's not a brown supremacist movement that is alive and well and a lot more proud of itself in Antifa. For all of the white supremacy that they say that is just you know, bubbling over on the right, very few people are very proud of saying it. Aren't white supremacists supposed to be proud of themselves?
Yeah, they're supposed to be out there in the streets proclaiming. Yeah,
meanwhile, they're denying. They're denying themselves over and over again. Where the hell are all these the proud white supremacists?
Yeah. No, I let's continue. So,
God.
I know. Oh, I have something cool to tell you, too, at the end of the show. But let's continue on this Chris Cuomo track.
He's being investigated for a crime that didn't happen and that he certainly didn't commit.
Who says it didn't happen? Russian interference happened.
Russian interference happened, for sure. But
can we stop with this whole Russian interference happened thing, too?
Yeah, well, they have to put it if they can keep that in line, then they can at least keep the last ditch excuse in line that everything that was done after the hack was out of concern for the country's national security, and it just so happens that Donald Trump was a victim of what was essentially Russian disinformation, and we're sorry about that. We still don't like Trump, but we're sorry about what happened to him for 3 years. So that's what's going on here. First of all, this interview was fantastic. I love it's all pretty much it's Chris Cuomo, who is like an unofficial host of The View, gets slapped down by an adult. This is great.
Yeah.
Cooperation and conspiracy between the Trump campaign and the Russians did not happen. And that was
to a criminal level. No, says Mr. Mueller.
To any level.
I don't know about any level, but to criminal level.
I do.
I'll give you.
Okay. And there's an investigation going on, not for a month or 6 months, but for 2 years, close to 2 years. And his administration is laboring under the shadow of that investigation. And people alleging that it happened, there are going to be indictments and so on and so forth.
But this is a special counsel. And it was put together by Rosenstein because he wanted it separate from the DOJ because of what he saw as potential.
It's not separate from the DOJ.
I know.
It's within the DOJ.
But as a mechanism.
I know.
Separate. I know it's under the DOJ. I understand how the guidelines are written. I understand why they were written, because we didn't like what the independent
counsel
was.
It's not just the guidelines. We have three branches of government. This is within the executive.
I understand.
We don't sprout a new branch of government.
But what your friend did is not just by the book. He took it on himself to decide this rule. He didn't have to do that.
Of course he had to do it.
Why?
Who was going to decide whether to indict or not?
Congress. As a political matter. Leave it to them.
They decide whether to impeach or not.
And Mike,
they
don't decide. You're skipping the big point, which you taught me about very
that
early
is
on.
The big point.
They can't indict him. That is the opinion
he just
of the OLC.
Literally. Oh, Lord. I don't even know if I want to hear the rest of it.
There's nothing to decide on that level. It is purely political. It always
Congress
would be.
Doesn't indict. Congress can't.
I know. I'm using it as just a, you know, a metaphor here.
But
we know you can't.
You're misleading a lot of people.
No, because we know the
OLC.
You
have a big audience.
We know the OLC says.
It's getting smaller by the minute
you
now.
Can and you can't. He's
being investigated. Oh, man.
Oh, Chris Cuomo, keep talking.
He has to feel. It has to feel like dying inside, as every time he says something, he's corrected. And then he has to say, I know. But you don't know, because you keep on getting corrected and then you're agreeing with the corrections, which means your prior statement was wrong. So, I mean, if this is what you're presenting your audience just within a 2-minute conversation, imagine how much stuff you're getting wrong over the course of an hour every night.
Yeah.
When nobody's there to tell him you're wrong.
I know. And speaking of which, he's the same man who told us that it was illegal to read what was inside the WikiLeaks emails. So you count on us to do it for you.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to find that because I think it's necessary. So Chris Cuomo has been on fire over the past couple days.
Well, he's been burning, but it's not like he's been going up in flames, but it's not like he's on fire.
No, he's not on fire in a good way.
It's like the Wicker Man.
We are going to... there was one other thing that I wanted to play, and I'm losing... Oh, Ben Rhodes. It was Ben Rhodes. We didn't talk about Ben Rhodes, and I don't think... I keep on losing track of the days. The Rosenstein letter came out after we had our Monday show, too, if I'm not mistaken.
For a crime that...
Whoops. Right?
Yeah.
What's the matter? Are you distracted?
Oh, wait. The Ben Rhodes thing on Monday?
No, we didn't talk about Ben Rhodes on the show. We talked about Sally Yates.
No, we did not. Yes, we did not.
And then Rod Rosenstein's thing, his oh my gosh, with the words today, his resignation happened after our show too. Correct.
Now, this was a resignation that was previewed for a while. Didn't he say he was going to?
Yeah.
Yeah. So this was not like, oh, my God, he resigned. But we kind of saw this coming.
Yes, we did.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. And I wasn't surprised by it at all. I was just pretty much like, OK, he resigned. And his letter, did you read it? I know that you read these things. You take the letter, it quoted a lot of really interesting folks.
I did not read it. I just heard, I saw the headline and I just said, okay, well, that's the end of that chapter. But what was there anything, what was in the letter that
the letter he quotes? Oh. Let me see if I can pull it up. And excuse me for not having this ready, because I wasn't expecting to talk about this right now. He quotes Robert Jackson. He was the lead prosecutor during the Nuremberg trials. So he quotes him a couple times inside of the letter, especially at the end, about, you know, justice and the Justice Department, etc. And then yesterday, when Attorney General Barr put out his opening statement, he also quoted Robert Jackson as well. That's two people quoting Robert Jackson in 2 days.
And what's the quote?
Oh, there's a couple. I don't have them handy, so don't ask me to find them right now. But right. There's a couple at the end, just basically in regards to what's going on. But you know, the fact that that's being done twice in a row is interesting to me. Because
there's a lot.
It is a lot.
There is a lot of good stuff happening out there, juicy stuff. Where it will lead will probably be to other juicy stuff.
Do you want to listen to Ben Rhodes real quick?
Sure.
Yeah, and then I can almost call what you're going to say about this, but let's see if I'm right.
As a private their investigation?
No. Look, I can't be clear enough about this. We didn't even know that there was an FBI investigation of Trump. I didn't. President Obama didn't. Like, we actually abided by the firewalls between, if there were any investigations that took place, those decisions were made in the Justice Department, in the FBI, not in the White House. They will find nothing that suggests that there was any political White House involvement in any of that. Literally, I learned about the FBI investigation in Trump as a private citizen in the freaking Washington Post. This, you have to understand that we actually abided by the long-standing practice of the White House not getting involved in that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
The Republicans on the Hill seem to be focusing on the dossier. And
we had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, so you never had seen it when you were in the White House?
I heard about it at the very end when, you know, in January of 2017, we weren't involved in commissioning the dossier. Like, that's crazy, you know? We learned about it when it was in the report that was, it was appended to the report that went to
a lot of stuttering.
Administration.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the Republicans were saying it was likely circulating in the government through the White House, and that they're going to look into that specifically. The dossier is circulating.
I have been investigated by these committees, and I'm telling you, they didn't find it. Like, we didn't. We had nothing to do with the dossier. I mean, literally, nothing to do with this dossier.
Kicked in $1 million. Kicked in $1 million, but we had nothing to do with it. Just like Hillary Clinton, the millions that she put into Fusion GPS to get that product made, but they didn't know what they were going to get out of it. Do you not want to have a receipt of exactly what you are getting for every $5 you spend, Tracy? They can spend millions on something and not know what's going to come from it. That's number one. There's a few things in there. Of course, the whole, I'm a private citizen. I was just a private citizen that was creating narratives to sell an Iran deal. Just a private citizen. Nothing out of the ordinary. I'm just learning the news through the Washington Post like everybody else. Okay. What about the Strzok and Page text about the White House wants to be apprised of everything we're doing? What part of the White House are they talking about? The cooks?
Even they have a part to play in this, Frank.
Yeah, no, seriously.
There was a piece that came out yesterday I'm trying to find right now that basically shows that Barack Obama also paid Fusion GPS lots of money, like you mentioned in the beginning. But what you have to remember about this guy, isn't he the same guy, Rhodes, that went and said that the American people were too stupid to realize what they were doing to us with Obamacare?
No, that was Jonathan Gruber.
Okay.
He was going. I mean, it doesn't matter. They're on the same level because Ben Rhodes was the one who he came out saying we essentially created a narrative to sell the Iran deal to the American people. Mm-hmm. So it's the same exact thing there. They knew that they were negotiating with an even more unfriendly regime out there in Iran, but they wanted to allay the fears of people here at home that the deal was actually good. And that was around the time that they're negotiating, they're putting the hex on Operation Cassandra, and they weren't going after certain Hezbollah generals and all that stuff to not anger Iran as they're trying to get this deal pushed through.
You know, I was listening to Dan Bongino's show from yesterday this morning, and he was talking about how he literally, Ben Rhodes, attacked the media during that to their faces, and nobody said a word about it. Like, they were just like, oh, we love you. Oh.
Like, thank you. Thank you, Daddy. Spank me again.
Let us talk about, let's do a quick 10 minutes before we wrap up and talk about some things at the end on the pros and the cons of Rod Rosenstein.
Okay.
We're going to scheme this out a little bit because I'm still 50-50 on what his role in all of this is, if he's a good guy or a bad guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Well. So let's bad guy points. He signed a FISA warrant. He supposedly talked about the 25th Amendment with Andrew McCabe.
Mm-hmm.
He appointed the special counsel.
Right.
He...
Oh, on that too. What do you think about Trump had made comments specifically about that, I think when he was on with Hannity, about how he did not give Robert Mueller the job for FBI director. He made it seem like Robert Mueller was trying to come and interview and request a job as FBI director. The only reason why I bring this up is because that meeting prior to the day that Rosenstein names Mueller as special counsel, everybody was wondering what was that all about, because Mueller was never going to be eligible for the job. But so what do you think that's all about?
I still don't know if that's, I mean, I don't see why Donald Trump would lie. I think he's telling the truth about that. I think, I don't know why Rosenstein would bring him in there knowing what he knows about the Justice Department and about the laws that were passed specifically to prevent Mueller. Not Mueller specifically, but someone like a Mueller from being FBI director again. So there's always that question mark over that meeting. But I don't know why Trump would lie at this point.
Gotcha.
So those are basically the few bad things, right? Other than his history, you know, a lot of people have differing opinions and could look at the cases he was involved in different ways. There, it's very polarizing, the Rod Rosenstein debate right now. Whether he was doing, you know, the work of the good guys or the work of the bad guys. Now, my few issues that I have with all of this is the FISA warrant. In the hearing with Matt Gaetz, he said that what's being represented as what's in the FISA warrant is different than what he signed. Do you remember that?
Yes.
So, like, that led everybody to speculate. Does that mean that he signed something and then they, like, just put the signature page in front of him representing it was something else? But he also made the scope memo to investigate Papadopoulos and Carter Page and Paul Manafort. And so he wrote that extended scope memo. So there's that. So we don't know what he's talking about in regards to the FISA warrant there. And then we don't know, you know, what his motivation was for the special counsel, other than the fact that the people on the good side of the story say that he took the investigation out of McCabe's hands because McCabe was obviously trying to plot against the president and moved it into like an outside agency, not agency, like Chris Cuomo would say, but an outside division, sort of a special counsel investigation, so that he would be able to do that, get it over with, do it impartially, in quotes, and keep it out of Andrew McCabe's hands, because Andrew McCabe is a crazy lunatic.
Mm.
So, and then there is the points that people are making right now that look at who is attacking him. It's the Benjamin Wittes of the world, the people that you'd think, if he was doing the right thing, would either be silent, if he was doing the wrong thing, I'm sorry, would either be silent or praising him,
right,
are coming out against him publicly. Now, is that all a ruse?
I don't know, because if it was a ruse, who is perpetrating the ruse? And those people perpetrating the ruse in this case are lacking very, very much. They have no self-control and they're very bad at acting and lying. So. Yeah. This looks too much like concern and worry than it is getting on in there and trying to throw off the scent, because we're in such an exposed state with this entire thing that I don't know. Everybody's so exposed right now. I think that everybody's losing their cool and the bad acting looks even worse now.
I agree. I think that I agree with you on that, because they are very transparent, even though they try not to be. The next point I want to make is, let's be careful about the 25th Amendment thing, because from all of the things that I've read, even though we have like the Bakers and the McCabes of the world saying that Rosenstein was serious about it, he said, what do you want me to do, Andy? Wear a wire? Like sarcastically? Like, do you think I'm really going to go in there? And like, how do you want me to get this done? Wear a wire on the president? Like as a facetious sort of a thing to say?
When I heard that for the first time, I said to myself, okay, well, the only believable way I can hear that being uttered is in a facetious way. What do you want? Because I talk like that all the time. Well, what do you want me to do? Blah 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 blah. But it also, like we were talking about before, desperate times calls for desperate measures. You can always say, well, you know what? He didn't make that joke one time. Yeah. There's no recording of it. We can always just say that he was for real. Mm-hmm. Try to get the heat. You know, so I can see that being used in a desperate sense when it was really just a sarcastic exchange.
Well, I'm still on the fence. I just find it interesting. He's coming. He's leaving on the 11th. I think that was 2 weeks after. I think that's when the Comey stuff is coming out. So it's just interesting. He's not going to be there when that happens. And
Comey stuff is coming out in June?
In May.
Okay. Isn't his resignation June 11th?
May.
Oh, I thought I saw it 6/11, not 5/11.
5/11.
Okay.
May.
I don't know. You with this stuff, I just like listening and thinking, because I go either way, and I don't know about Rod Rosenstein. I tend to lean toward bad guy, because I tend to lean toward everybody in government as a bad guy. That's just it for me.
Okay. We'll move on to close the show out a little early today so you can get your little booty to the dentist.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll say let me ask you on air, and then I'll talk to you off air about the rest. Are you busy the weekend of the 17th of May?
May 17th? Mm-hmm. Let me see here. May 17th. That's a Friday. You're talking about Friday?
Yeah, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
I don't know. I'd have to go double check.
Go double check.
That would be, if anything, that would be the weekend that Lauren and I do something for our anniversary.
Well, that would be perfect, actually.
Because it's on the 21st, so I don't know.
Well, we'll talk off air, but that weekend is the first anniversary of the walkaway campaign in D.C.
Oh!
So Friday, we're doing a big movie screening at the Trump International Hotel of the documentary that was created for Walkaway. Really, really good movie, actually. And then Saturday is the Roaring Twenties anniversary party. And then Sunday, there's a rally in front of the White House. But the coolest thing happened. The flyer came out, and we've been working on this behind the scenes a little bit. You know who's on the flyer?
Who?
Flashback to the early 90s for all of you out there. Christy Swanson.
Christy Swanson?
Buffy.
What, she's going to be there?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Oh, yes, ma'am.
Christy Swanson is she's part of Walkaway?
She is going to be there for the weekend for the party.
Wow.
Yeah, we're excited about it.
Yeah, I had a big crush on her.
A lot of guys did. My husband asked me to get her autograph. Katrina Pearson will be there, too. I'll be there. Scott Pressel will be there.
One hell of a time will be had by all.
You know who else?
I'll definitely see what the hell's going on.
You know who else is going to be there?
Who?
Carpe Donctum.
Oh, really?
Yep.
The meme maker?
The meme maker in the flesh. Pastor Burns.
Got to get him to follow me back. I got to get him to make some custom stuff for the show. I want to just start jam packing my show with tons of memes and tons of funny breaks. I want to talk less.
David Harris Jr.
Wait, who's he?
He's a popular, he has a website, popular conservative.
If I saw all these faces, I'd know them.
Yeah.
There's just so many names these days.
If you go to give.classy.org/BOGO, BOGO, right now, you can get buy one, get one tickets.
Cool.
And when we get off the air in just a second, I have something to share with you.
Can't wait.
That's that. So listen, guys, I hope that you're enjoying my Twitter feed. And we will be back on Friday. Did you ever get in touch with Richard Barris?
I reached out to him. He's not gotten back to me yet on Twitter, but he always does. It's probably just been a busy 48 hours. I started writing to him right as soon as we got off from our Monday morning call.
Okay, cool. So we can hopefully have Richard on Friday. If not, we'll have him on later on. But whatever the case may be, thank you for listening to the Dark to Light podcast with...
What was I saying? Hygienist cleaning Frank?
No, on my way to the dentist, Val.
On my way to the dentist, Val.
And
yeah, well, it's coming.
That's okay. You'll be all
right. I'm going to go rinse with some Scope right now, and I'll be on my way.
It's the worst when you have to go to the get a cleaning and you're worried that they're going to be like, ew.
Oh, they're going to be like, ew. Just and not because I don't. First of all, no cavities. I've got great teeth. I brush multiple times a day. But, you know, like I said, I've got these permanent retainers that are getting more and more fragile. So I have not wanted to do anything around them. So I'm sure tartar is like building up around the retainer itself.
We'll get it all fixed in just a few minutes.
Absolutely.
You guys can listen to the show on Google Podcasts, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com. We will be back on Friday.
Bye.
This is a Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
When you see the things that police officers see on a daily basis, and I've seen my fair share, and trust me, there's stuff I wish I could get out of my head, but I cannot. Like the very first time I smelled a dead body, I can still, in my mind, when I think about it, smell that smell. And if you ask any police officer, the very first time they smelled a dead body, they will tell you that's a smell they will never forget. I've seen some gross stuff. I've seen people shot in the head. I've seen people ran over. I've seen all kind of stuff. I've seen people with bones sticking out of their body from car wrecks. So that stuff weighs on you. And especially when you're doing it in a city like Chicago, where you're not respected anyway, especially after the whole Jason Van Dyke, Laquan McDonald thing and everything that's going on there. And then you got the community, oh, we don't like you, we need to come in and we need to be able to tell you how to do your job, blah blah blah. That's a lot for any officer to have to go through. And to keep in mind, police officers are human. They have human things going on. They have emotions. They have family problems. They have financial problems. They have marital problems. All of the problems that everyone else has, police have them too. But on top of that, they still have to go out and be the problem solver. So if you don't think that weighs heavy on a person, it does. Don't think you're going to sound like a punk if you say, hey, Sarge, I need to go have some mental health counseling, or I need to take some time off. Don't think you're going to sound like a punk, because remember, the public is the only entity, the only demographic that sees us police officers as this machine, as something that has no emotion. But we know that is not true. So if there's any police officer, any first responder under the sound of my voice right now that feels they need help, please, please go out and get that help. Get that help, please.
Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.